Hello and welcome to the July 21st edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you from the studios in downtown Juno, KTOO. We've got a great show. We're going to talk about a fundraiser that is Christmas in July, get a little spotlight on Cycle Alaska, see what's going on there, and then another fundraiser, the Southeast Alaska Feast. Sounds fabulous. And then ending with Arts Up with Nancy DeCharney. All that and more. Stay tuned.
For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons in for Antonio Gonzalez. Alaska delegates of the Republican National Convention are among those feeling left out because of organizers' attempts to present a unified front for Donald Trump. Artie Robertson says the state came to the convention with more votes for Ted Cruz than for Trump and hoped to cast accordingly because Cruz's campaign was suspended, not stopped.
The party, however, says that's not so. So they reallocated all of our other votes to Trump, and we weren't happy with that because we want to be represented fairly the way the people of Alaska voted.
Robertson, a high school English teacher, also says Alaska Native voters benefit from the Republican Party's stance on government regulations since so many are subsistence fishermen and hunters. A large part of the middle of the country remains in an excessive heat warning. Several communities on tribal lands had temperatures well above 100 degrees this week, but there could be some relief over the weekend. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Most of South Dakota's 9 reservations have been sweltering this week with triple-digit temperatures and dangerously high humidity readings. Travis Tarver is with the National Weather Service in Aberdeen, South Dakota.
We're going to see the hot conditions continue today and tomorrow. We do have a frontal boundary that's moving south across the region, so it's actually going to be a few degrees cooler than what we saw on Wednesday, but still pretty hot, highs in the 90s to low 100s. And once again, those heat index values are going to be, you know, ranging from, the mid-90s north to, the 100s again further south.
Tarver says the heat wave should end late Friday and produce temperatures in the 80s. But he says some severe storms could develop as the cooler air comes in. I'm Gary Ellenbold.
Native American radio stations play a key role in diversifying the media landscape. That's the message from Federal Communications Commissioner Mignon Clyburn, speaking at this week's Tribal Radio Summit in Phoenix. She says she recognizes tribal radio stations as powerful sources of news, information, and entertainment.
Through meaningful consultation, by working together, we will successfully address the needs of tribal nations and will do so in a manner that recognizes the paramount role of tribal governments, sovereign entities, to govern, educate, and care for your members.
The FCC's Office of Native American Affairs and Policy is one of the summit's hosts. It was created 6 years ago to focus on tribal priorities. The World Eskimo Indian Olympics are underway in Fairbanks, Alaska. The event is celebrating its 56th year, drawing Native athletes and dancers from as far away as Scandinavia and Russia. As KUAC's Robin reports, this year's games are dedicated to a beloved host who died last year.
The traditional call to the pullers of the blanket toss was often punctuated by the deep voice of Robert Aiken, Big Bob as he was known. Sam Strange, the chair of WEO's Board of Governors, remembers Aiken as a champion.
Big Bob was involved not just in WEO, but also in the NYO level, or Native Youth Olympics, which is our elementary and high school level, as a coach, mentor. He was involved with Arctic Winter Games, which was in Greenland just a few months ago, and still to this day is the most wins in the Eskimo stick pole that no one's beat.
Aiken was born and raised in Barrow and died last November at age 62. At 6'4" and anywhere upwards of 300 pounds, he might have intimidated other participants. But Nicole Johnston, this year's head official, says Aiken valued sportsmanship because it was part of his Inupiaq culture.
He was very passionate about the honor that these games brought to our people. He reminded us it's our responsibility to make sure that the tradition of these games stays with the participants, with the athletes, that they understand why these games were played. You had to rely on each other to survive.
This year's games continue through Saturday. I'm Robin in Fairbanks.
And I'm Stephen Emmons.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
And by Humboldt State University's online Master of Social Work program, which focuses on decolonizing work with rural and indigenous communities. Applications accepted August 1st to 31st at humboldt.edu/social work. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, it is 5 minutes past the hour. It's July 21st, and this is Juno Afternoon coming at you from Alaska's capital city. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. He's at the board. I'm Joan Pardis, your host, and the weather is, it's raining in southeast Alaska. Not hard, but it is raining, and we had scattered rain showers this morning, and now they're saying numerous rain showers in the afternoon, highs around 60. Tomorrow, rain, lows in the mid-50s. Friday night, rain, and then we're looking at rain throughout the weekend so your house can finally get cleaned. It's 60 degrees throughout the area, at the downtown Juneau area, at the airport in Mendenhall Valley, and even in Douglas. And our first guests are representatives of the Juneau Rotaract Club and AWARE. They're here to talk about a fundraiser for both organizations. So we have Tamsin Peoples representing Rotaract, and we have Britta Thomason from AWARE, and they're here to talk about Christmas in July. It is getting just a little chillier. It's still 60 degrees.
That's a first hint of what's to come for the rest of the year, right?
Yeah.
Just a smidge.
We'll see. We'll see. It's been quite a fantastic summer. So let's talk about Christmas in July. When does it happen, and what's the event about? What can people expect, and where do the funds go?
So this weekend on Saturday night is our first fundraiser. The Juneau Rotaract Club started up again this March after a few years hiatus, and this is our first major fundraiser event ever that we're hosting. And we've partnered with AWARE to raise fundraising funds for not only us, but also another wonderful local nonprofit. It's this Saturday night at the Hangar Ballroom from 8 to midnight. So bring your ugly sweater contest attire, because that'll be kicking off at 9:30. We're also going to have a DJ, photos with Tropical Santa, and some amazing items for a live and silent auction that were donated by some fantastic local businesses.
No, that sounds great. So this is kind of like the Hawaiian shirt, Christmas in July,
yeah.
Or if you want to go traditional and just do the whole Kris Kringle red.
You can do whatever floats your boat. Kind of imagine how they'd be celebrating Christmas down in Australia on the Gold Coast. You know, bring your board shirts, your jandals, but also your ugly sweaters.
Oh, my. Okay, it's Christmas Crocodile Dundee. I have a couple of questions for you before we even talk with Britta, who's our other guest in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us all, what is the Rotaract Club?
Well, many folks in town have heard about Rotary. You see a lot of Rotary parks. You see a lot of charitable projects that they've worked on. And Rotaract is a subset of Rotary angled for individuals 18 to 30. So it's a bunch of young professionals who want to give back to the community. We may not have the same fiscal means as most of the Rotarians do, but we still have that drive to give back. There's folks that are born and raised here. There's also folks that just moved into the community just a few years ago. People with all sorts of careers and lifestyles, but just have that desire and a love of the area and want to give back to the place that we call home.
Great. So the funds, let's talk a little bit about the who, what, where, when, and why. So
mm-hmm.
It's this Saturday. It's at the Hangar Ballroom from 8 to midnight. It's 21 and over.
Mm-hmm.
It's tickets $15 at the Jack or from Rotaract Club members, and it's $20 at the door with one free drink with that admission. Okay, so the funds, the Rotaract, it's a co-fundraiser between AWARE and Rotaract.
Mm-hmm.
The Rotaract funds, what kind of things is this subset of Rotary interested in donating to or supporting?
Well, we're still a pretty small club at the moment. There's only 26 of us total, so we're still gaining momentum, gaining numbers. This is going to be kind of our funding base, so that when we find an organization or we find a cause, you know, randomly in September, October, or even coming into the next calendar year, that we all feel really good about, whether we hear about a business that might need a hand or a park that needs a cleanup. This will be the funding and cushioning to our pockets to allow us to do that, to give back in ways. Because right now we're operating on pretty slim, because we just started up in March. So this is our way to start building momentum to give back to the community.
That sounds great. So you have about 26 members.
Mm-hmm.
If someone's what did you say, 21 to 30?
18 to 30.
18 to 30, and they're listening, and they say, oh, I want to be part of that club. How would they find out more information?
Well, probably one of the easiest ways is through Facebook. You know, social media is kind of the hip and happening way to go about things.
You mean 18 to 30-year-old?
Yeah,
is it an Instagram way to say
it? No, we don't have a Twitter yet either. But you can look at us up at Juno Rotaract Club on Facebook, or you can email us at rotaractjuno@gmail.com. That's rotaractjuno, all one word, @gmail.com.
And there might just be a few of you at this Christmas in July event on Saturday.
I'm hoping all of us. I mean, they better.
Yeah, right. So if you're interested, you can come and check it out and talk to them there.
Yeah, please do.
So, Britta, let's talk about AWARE.
Sure.
Many of us know AWARE. They're a great neighbor and a great nonprofit here in town. But can you tell us a little bit about the organization so we're not just working on our own assumptions?
Yeah, sure. First, just want to say thank you to Rotaract for thinking about us. It's so nice to have fellow community members supporting our services because I believe we offer a lot to the community, and in particular young adults, and many of them are locals, and I think they've probably been in touch with AWARE for a while through AWARE's prevention team, which does a lot of activities with nonviolence in the schools, elementary through high school and Juno and throughout the Southeast. You might have heard of Boys Run, Girls on the Run, the Be the Change, Rebound, those types of activities. Those are all run through AWARE. We also are on the Juno Violence Prevention and the Juno Suicide Prevention Coalitions. AWARE is part of this. We have the state accredited batterer intervention program, the Juno Choice and Accountability Program, which is for men who have mostly been convicted of battering, but also we have some self-referrals and OCS refers some men to our program. We have the shelter, which most people know about, which is our crisis center, and the transitional housing CASE that opened up just over a year ago over by Twin Lakes, and that's been a really great success. It's affordable housing for women who are kind of in transition between maybe where they were living before and what they're able to, what Juno presents as housing options, which is pretty expensive and very limited. And then the women's support groups, which many people know about. We also have one of the state's best children's programs. So we have children's advocates, children's counselors who are licensed, and a children's program. We have child care offered for free during women's support groups. Or when women need to go to court. So some other resources we have are the legal advocacy program with protective orders and a legal clinic that's monthly. We also have the HART, the Hospital Emergency Assault Response Team, which responds to domestic violence and sexual assault calls in the emergency room. All of our services are free and confidential, minus JCAP, which men need to pay, or they can do community work service hours. So having groups like Rotaract help fund in any way is just really helpful.
Wow, that is a lot of services.
Yeah.
Thank you for you and your team for doing everything you do for Juno. So if you're just joining us, we're chatting about a fundraiser this Saturday night. It's Christmas in July, and it's going to have a DJ, and it's 8 to midnight at the Hangar. It's for 21+, and it sounds like a great time. And it will be the fundraiser to get the Rotaract chapter up and running fiscally, and funds will also go to AWARE, to some of or all of those mini programs that you talked about. So go on down to the Hangar and check it out. And in closing, ladies, do you have anything you want to add about the event?
We're just really excited to get the Rotaract Club integrated into the community again, get the word out, get hopefully exposure to a bunch of other folks in town, young professionals, or just anyone who's really interested in giving back to the community in any way possible that they can or want to. So hopefully we'll all see you there. It's, right again, 8 to midnight. The live auction and ugly sweater contest start at 9:30. So if you want to be there for that, be sure you're there before 9:30. And please just come support us. We'd love to see you. Please talk to us about the club and the opportunities that we have in the future. And if you have any community service ideas, we'd love to hear those too.
That sounds great. Okay, so before I let you go, I have to ask you one thing because I'm always interested. Mm-hmm. So tell me one silent or live auction item that you have.
Well, how does two round-trip flights and Alaska seaplanes fly sound?
That sounds really good. Towards Christmas in July.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think
Christmas
anyone's
present.
Running to solstice right now.
No.
Solstice. But that sounds worth it. All right, that sounds great. Thank you both for coming in and talking about this fundraiser. Thank you both for all that you're doing for Juno. And we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with our next guest.
Feliz Navidad, próspero año y felicidad. Feliz Navidad, feliz Navidad, feliz Navidad, próspero año y felicidad.
It is 17 minutes past the hour. You're listening to KTOO, Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. Hey, tomorrow night, 6 p.m., the Juno Douglas Little Theater is hosting a fundraiser to raise money for the victims and families of the Orlando shooting last month. To promote love, the fundraiser will be a Shakespeare celebration. Read a monologue, sonnet, scene from your favorite Shakespeare work, and help spread the love. So that is at 6 p.m. at KTOO, right downstairs. So come check that out. There's also, of course, a big block party tomorrow night, 5 to 7:30, and the Marimba Band. Oh, man, they are great. They're going to be playing, so that's tomorrow night. But right now, we have John McConaughey from Cycle Alaska. He's the owner. It's a year-round local business that many of us know about, but we're going to get into the real – we're going to hear it from the horse's mouth, the biker's mouth, as far as what the company does and all the different things that they offer. So, hey, John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joan.
Okay, so let's talk. I know that Cycle Alaska has been around a long time, but can you tell us about how long and how it formed and what the goal was at that point?
Yes, it started in 1997. Joyce Waldman and her husband started a small tour company, mainly down on the docks, just having a trailer there, and people could rent bikes and or take people out on tour. And that developed, Joyce developed that over the years to contracts with the cruise companies to offer tours on board. And my wife and I, Peggy Ann, purchased the company in 2005, and we have owned it since. Mm-hmm. We not only now do tours as well, but we also have a retail aspect that's been open now 10 years.
And where is that retail
shop? I'm sorry, not 10, 6 years.
6 years. And where is that retail shop?
We're on West 8th Street. It's the bright red building, fire engine red building that sits on the corner there. You can't miss it.
As you're coming downtown past the bridge, right?
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
It's on your right over there. So what are some of your summer tours that you do, and are they open to locals?
They are open to locals. We have a discount for locals, or if they have family coming into town too, we have a discount for them also. We have two main tours. We have a bike and brew tour, which is a bike tour mainly in the valley, highlighting the glacier from both sides, the west and the east side. And then we come down to the flight deck or the Alaska Fish Ship Company, and we do a flight of beers there from not only the Alaskan brewery, but other breweries throughout the state, microbreweries throughout the state. And the second main tour that we have is called Bike and Tram, and that starts up at Eagle Crest, goes down Fish Creek Road, and then on North Douglas to False Outer Point, and then they return to town, and then they go up in the Mount Roberts Tram. We have also specialty tours, too, which we customize for people, depending on certain elements they may want to see in town. So they're always a lot of fun. In fact, we just had a large group of 19 people just 2 days ago on a specialty tour.
And a specialty tour, what do they want to see?
These are a group of riders that are active riders. And so they come in spandex and helmets and gloves and the whole works. And we provide the bikes. And we start them further out the road. So they want to get more than the 8.5 to 9 miles of our traditional tours. And they did a little over 18 miles. And, of course, a lot of them wanted to go further. For a number of them, that was just about right. So those are the sort of things that we will do. And we have a family coming in here next week that want to do something similar. They're active riders again. The tours themselves, the riding is a sort of a pedestrian pace. It's not so fast because we do go too fast and some people get left behind. So we try and average that all out. But sometimes when people are active riders, they will do a custom tour with us.
Yeah, that sounds great. And as far as the retail operation, that's year-round, correct?
It is.
Okay.
We made the choice when we opened up the retail side that we were going to be a year-round business. It is rather slow in the wintertime, but it gives us a chance to plan and get things built. And we also offer indoor cycling classes through the winter, too, which keeps things pretty active.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know about that. That's wonderful. So that's great. And then, of course, you have a whole suite of different bikes.
We do. We started carrying five brands, but we're a small shop, and we just could not highlight the models we thought would be best in Juneau and add the depth of sizes as well. So we do have two main brands right now, Trek and Kona, both well-known names. Kona's been in town for many, many years, built great bikes. They're out of the Northwest and great company deal with, as is Trek. And we do have some specialty bikes that we bring in, like the 907, the Fat Tire bike. Two friends of ours up north developed a model of the Fat Tire bike called the 907, and they have a real niche. Most of the major companies now have a Fat Tire bike, but they were one of the original ones to come out, and they still have a large following. And they're around here, they're great to ride, not only the winter on the snow and so forth, but a lot of our trails can be a little primitive in certain areas as far as roots and rocks. And that bigger tire just floats over things.
Yeah, that is really just taking over. The Fat Tire has really found its little segment of the market.
It certainly has. It's one of the growth areas in the market. And I just heard somebody mention the other day, I don't know if this is true, but the source is very reliable, that money spent on Fat Tire bikes and equipment in Anchorage has actually outpaced cross-country ski equipment.
So interesting.
And as he said, the gentleman said there's 10,000 Fat Tire bikes in Anchorage alone.
I was up north when they were doing a Fat Tire race on the Iditarod Trail.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty interesting. So anyway, we were visiting some friends up there. That was really fun. All right, but let's talk a little bit more about, like, kids and bikes. So you have bikes for kids, too, for everybody?
We do, all the way from the Striders, the ones without pedals, so that, mm-hmm. you know, anybody, children from about the time they can walk all the way to 3, 4, they learn the balance on these Striders. It's a great form of exercise for kids, too. Now, you don't want to start them up Cordova Street and come down to North Douglas Highway, but, you know, gentle slopes are okay, but mainly flat areas. And a lot of times parents who come in and then the child is upgrading now to a pedal bike, they do not want any support wheels on the sides, the training wheels, that they just want the kids to go straight out on this bike. And most of them can do it because the balance they've gained from these Strider bikes. Then the size of the wheels go up based on the height of the children. And we have a program, too, that if you purchase a bike, a children's bike from us, the Striders are not included in it, but if you go the 16, 20, 24-inch wheel bike, you bring the bike back in 3 years' time and it's in good shape. Now, we recognize there's going to be nicks and dings and little things like that, but if it hasn't sat outside the whole time and it's in pretty good shape, you get up to 40% discount credit on the next purchase.
That sounds great.
Yep. It's a great way to trade up and go from wheelbase to wheelbase as the child grows.
That's great. That is great. All right. Well, if you're just joining us, we've been chatting with John McConaughey from Cycle Alaska. They've got their summer tour operation, but they're also a year-round great community member that's here offering spinning classes in the winter, and then a wide variety of bike options, and that 40% trade-up for families. So as your kids grow, that you could just bring back your bike if it hasn't survived a Juneau winter or something of that
right
outside.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today and telling us a little bit about your business.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 21st of July, 2016. It's the birthday of Ernest Hemingway in Oak Park, Illinois, 1899, the son of Clarence, a doctor, Grace, a music teacher. He and his brother and sisters grew up in a 7-bedroom house with a summer house near Petoskey, Michigan. Ernest played the cello, played football, wrote for the school paper. His father taught him to fish and hunt and camp in the woods. After high school, he went to work for the Kansas City Star as a reporter, where the style guide said, use short sentences, use short first paragraphs, use vigorous English, be positive, not negative. At the age of 18, he volunteered to be a Red Cross ambulance driver in Italy during World War I. He was seriously injured by mortar fire, spent 6 months in the hospital with shrapnel wounds. It was the beginning of an adventurous life that included 2 very serious airplane crashes, near death from blood poisoning while on African safari, his hotel room being blown up during the Spanish Civil War, various car accidents, and much more. He also married 4 times. He had 3 children. He wrote 7 novels, including The Sun Also Rises, A Farewell to Arms, and For Whom the Bell Tolls, all while doing serious drinking. After World War II, which he covered as a correspondent, Hemingway sank into depression, partly a result of his injuries. He suffered severe headaches, diabetes, high blood pressure. He suffered the deaths of his friends Yeats, Fitzgerald, James Joyce, Gertrude Stein, his editor Maxwell Perkins, and he had great difficulty writing. He worked on a novel, The Garden of Eden. He wrote 800 pages of it and then stopped. A novel called The Sea Book, likewise. His novel, Across the River and Into the Trees, came out to negative reviews, and the following year he wrote the draft of The Old Man and the Sea in 8 weeks, saying that it was the best I can write ever for all of my life. And it was a success, and probably a factor in winning him the Nobel Prize in Literature in 1954. He worked on his memoir, A Movable Feast, through the 1950s, a long magazine piece about Spain. He fell into paranoia and deep depression, and in July 1961, at his house in Ketchum, Idaho, he committed suicide with a shotgun. Ernest Hemingway, who said, never go on trips with anyone you do not love. He said, man is not made for defeat. A man can be destroyed, but not defeated. He said, the world is a fine place and worth the fighting for, and I hate very much to leave it. Here's a poem for today by Jim Barnes entitled Directions. On my way back from the Tubac, 2 Dutch businessmen stopped to ask which way and how far to the metro. I tell you, it felt fine. I felt Parisian and tried to sound it. Walking to the Crayon, Caroline and I were stopped by a chic couple who asked if they were near the Ritz. We pointed diagonally toward Place Vendôme, then shared our Michelin. Only in Paris, as they say, can an American be so French that Europeans ask directions and 7 strangers wave at you from cars and waiters read your mind and offer Chateau Neuf du Pape. Directions, a poem by Jim Barnes from his collection Paris, published by University of Illinois Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Southeast Living Magazine, Southeast Alaska's real estate, home, and lifestyle magazine, working to reach potential home buyers and featuring articles on the unique lifestyle of Southeast, available online at seakliving.com.
Welcome back to the show. It's half past the hour. Jeff Brown is at the board. I'm Joan Partis, your Thursday host. It's July 21, and we're coming at you from downtown Juneau because it's Juneau afternoon. And our next guests are Jill Weiss of Some and Beyond Borders and Bo Schooler, local chef and entrepreneur who owns three restaurants in town.
Yeah, we have the Rickery Cafe, the Taqueria, and in Boca Alupo.
And that's in the old Silver Bow Bakery. Yeah, they're really yummy, all three of them. Thanks, Bo,
for sharing
your skills in town. So, but they're not here just to talk about that. They're here to talk about an event this Saturday. It's at the Jack. It's Saturday or Sunday?
It's Saturday.
This Saturday at the Jack, and it's the Southeast Feast. So what is this event?
Yeah, so this is the inaugural event for Southeast Feast, and it's building off of a dinner that Bo did last summer here in Juneau with some chefs that he brought up to kind of just bear witness to this place and the fresh seafood product. And Salmon Beyond Borders was lucky enough to partner with that event last year, and it was super successful, and so Bo thought, go bigger, and that's what we're doing.
Okay, so what can people expect? It's from 12 to 4 at the Jack.
Yep. Correct. And then we have 7 chefs visiting, and then local people from my restaurants. So we have 10 booths total, and I'll be doing a different type of seafood preparation, so different fish each one.
Wow. Okay, and where are these chefs coming from?
So 2 from San Francisco, 1 from Napa, 1 from Houston, 1 from New Orleans, and 2 from Toronto.
Oh, wow, that sounds terrific. And so each station, so you walk into the Jack, there'll be 10 different stations. I'm just vamping here. I have no idea.
Yeah, you're right.
Tell me when I'm wrong. And they'll all be cooking up a different form of seafood?
Yeah, so one person has king salmon, one has sockeye, one has coho, has halibut, black cod, true cod. We have spot prawns, Dungeness crab, scallops. I don't know if I'm missing anything.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fish right now.
There's so much.
Sounds great.
Yeah, it's been really awesome. A lot of the local seafood processors have donated for this event. So it's we couldn't do this without the generosity of the commercial fishermen and the processing businesses here in town. So Bo's got plenty to work with this week.
That sounds great. So how much are tickets?
$40.
$40. And then is there is the Alaskan Brewery involved? Or?
Yeah, we have a beer garden. You have wine, too?
Yeah. Yep. Wine, we're going to have a beer garden. There will be wine served through Louis Douglas Inn. Just all around, it's going to be really good.
It sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about Salmon Beyond Borders, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm assuming this is a fundraiser.
Yeah.
Okay. So what does Salmon Beyond Borders do? What's their mission?
Yeah, thank you. Salmon Beyond Borders is it's a campaign that started about two and a half years ago. And we work hard to defend our transboundary rivers, namely the Taku, just out our back door, the Stikeen and the Yunik. And it's a group of commercial fishermen, sport fishermen, municipal leaders, individuals, conservation organizations. It's kind of a whole collective of all of Southeast Alaska, business owners as well, that are working hard to protect these rivers from mining developments in British Columbia. Currently, the United States and Alaska doesn't have a meaningful way to be involved when determining these types of developments. And so we are working hard to gain partners across the border to really get a seat at the table and be part of the conversation for how these watersheds are developed.
Wow, so that sounds like it's an interagency effort and that perhaps your organization is an umbrella organization for other organizations as well?
Yeah, there are a lot of different groups that are represented under Salmon Beyond Borders, and we work really closely with different tribal entities in Southeast Alaska as well, namely the United Tribal Transboundary Mining Work Group, which is a mouthful, but they represent 14 of the 19 federally recognized tribes in Southeast.
It's a mouthful because it
exactly it is, right? Yeah. So it's just a really cool campaign, and we've come a long way in raising awareness for this issue because you know, these rivers are what provide our healthy and sustainable fisheries and our clean water, and that's what brings tourism to town, and it sustains, you know, all of Southeast Alaska. These waters are really like the lifeblood of what pumps our economy and our livelihoods. So.
If you're just joining us, that's Jill Weiss speaking, and she's talking about Salmon Beyond Borders, and you talked about sustainability,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to extrapolate. I'm going to once again just vamp and say, so Bo, I have a feeling that you have an investment in having great seafood in Alaska, and Alaska being, you know, the last frontier and one of the, I don't know how many sustainable fisheries are left on the planet, but I would think that we're high. I'm probably on top of that list. So how does that affect you as a chef and an entrepreneur here in Juneau?
Well, if I didn't have good seafood, no one would think I was a good cook. I don't know what I'm doing otherwise. But I think it affects anyone that lives in Alaska, whether or not they realize it on the surface. But everybody knows fishing families or people that work with processors or somehow tied in with the fishing community. And so if something like that collapsed, I mean, it would really devastate towns, cities, towns, villages.
The state.
Yeah, so...
And then we could go on to the state, the country, the
mm-hmm.
planet, so on and
yeah.
so forth. But so when you – I'm assuming that the people who are coming up are chefs that you've interacted and
yeah.
have relationships with from your travels
mm-hmm.
as a fantastic chef. So, you know, when you call them up and say, hey, I'm doing a seafood fest in Alaska, I have a feeling that people might want to jump on that.
Oh, yeah. Those people that we kind of couldn't take.
Exactly. And also, it just kind of be fun to have all those people in the room, you know, like New Orleans and so on and so forth,
oh, yeah.
San Francisco, all these people who have their own relationship with, you know,
with seafood.
Yeah, yeah. They're just really incredibly nice, kind, you know, they've all got really busy work lives going on where they're from, and they're taking time out to come up here.
Right. And it's not a Top Chef type of thing. It's just like, come on up and cook, and let's have some fun.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and they get to, like, meet the commercial fishermen and watch this fish, this product, be unloaded off the docks and then be able to work with it. It's a pretty fantastic opportunity. Yeah.
Sounds great. It sounds great. Okay, so let's talk about the event one more time. Can you give us the, you know, the 411, as they say, as
Do
I
it.
Just said.
Go.
So Saturday at the Jack from noon to 4. $40 thing. Get their tickets online. They don't remember the website, but they should hurry up and do it because they're almost sold out. I think we have a quarter left or a third left, so
mm-hmm. yeah.
they're going
Sounds
quick.
Great. It's 12 to 4. There's a wine provided by Louis. There's a beer garden,
yep.
and 10 chefs from around the world, including Bo, who's here in Juneau, cooking up all different types of seafood. And where can they get the tickets?
They can go online to salmonbeyondborders.org or directly to thejack.org.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds great. And they're probably available over at the Jack Building as
mm-hmm.
well.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you both for
thank
what you,
you
do
so much.
For our community in doing this fundraiser. And come on in and talk about what's going on in your world anytime. That would be great.
Awesome.
All right. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Dr. Dennis Paulson is BirdNote's chief science advisor. An expert on shorebirds, he explains what new technology is revealing about shorebird migration.
This is telling us how far an individual bird migrates. It's telling us exactly where it stops and how few stopover places a typical shorebird has. So certain places it's very dependent on, and birds tend to go by exactly the same route year after year.
And for many shorebirds, migration is not strictly a north-south affair.
The shorebird can come to the New England coast in the fall from the Arctic and actually just set off across the North Atlantic Ocean to South America. And they land in, say, Venezuela or the Guianas. It's during the height of the rainy season. Lots and lots of things to eat. Then it goes on to its wintering grounds. In the spring, when it comes back north, it's a time when rainfall is falling in southern United States. So coming up across the Gulf of Mexico and stopping somewhere in Louisiana or Texas or Nebraska, lots of ponds, lots of insects coming out, lots of worms.
So which other habitats do shorebirds need to make their monumental journeys?
Coastal estuaries on both of our coasts and in fact all over the world are extremely important because shorebirds are birds that feed on invertebrates exposed by low tides. So large mud flats, large estuaries where there are lots of invertebrate life that they can find easily when they stop in migration are vital to them.
Dennis has a lot more stories about shorebirds. Find them on our website, birdnote.org.
I'm Jesse Ford. Bullseye is about finding the good stuff in popular culture, the kind of stuff that might change your life.
Kind of giving me the chills hearing it right now.
You know, I'd never heard anything like it before. It'd be like seeing a new color.
It felt transcendent.
It's Bullseye with me, Jesse Thorne, from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Tune in Saturdays at 2 p.m.
It is 13 minutes to the hour, and currently it is 54 at the airport, 55 downtown, Mendenhall Valley is 51, and Douglas, they are a whopping 56.
Oh, my gosh.
I am. I've been reading this weather for a while. I've never seen Douglas there. Douglas is on
heating up
the NOAA map, yeah, and the warmest of all. So there you go.
Yeah, okay.
So we're here with Nancy DiCerni. She's the executive director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. And hey, I want to say I read in the Capital City Weekly about MK's new bags.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
I'm so excited. I'm going to go and get some and send them to all the family that visited.
Think of them
Juno
as Christmas gift bags. You just fill them all up, and
so if you don't
know,
why don't you?
Well,
Talk a little bit about the
Foodland IGA Super Bear folks approached us to do a call for art because they wanted to do shopping bags with art on them, and that happened, and they selected a wonderful painting by MK. It's got the glacier on it in bright colors, and it's just beautiful. And the proceeds from the sales of the bag, MK gets a little, and we get a little, and a food program gets a little bit. So it's a nice benefit for
food
the community.
Food program, you're talking about breakfast and lunches people who need breakfast and lunches.
Yeah, so it's a real nice thing, and they're great bags, and they're nice and sturdy, and you can get them, get two of them, because then you get a discount. It's $3.99 a piece if you get two of them. So.
That sounds great. That sounds great.
Well, get many of them.
That sounds wonderful. Okay,
all right.
So we talked about the Southeast Feast, which
Yum.
Is from 12 to 4
gonna be tomorrow.
Saturday. 10
it's
chefs
Saturday.
From around the country cooking our very own seafood.
Mm-hmm.
Not our very own, but Southeast's very own seafood. And then we also talked to the Rotaract people who are having their Christmas in July.
Cool.
So what else is happening?
There are a few things going on. Tonight at 6, there is a SEAS lecture about sailboat rigging, and that takes place at the Egan Library. There's tango dancing, apparently, at the Rockwell Ballroom. There's swing dancing at the Imperial. Terry Tibbett and Matt Barnes are at the bar, Alaskan Bar, and Abby Karaoke at McGivney's. So you have a few things you could do tonight.
You can dance, you can sing,
you can do it all. There is, Friday night, of course, is our Rock Around the Block party, and we wish it would be sunny, but it doesn't look like it's going to be. But nonetheless, it's going to be the Njuzu marimbas, which will make it seem sunny. And that will be in the Jack. So come on down for that.
I heard them in Marine Park the other day. They are great.
They're just fabulous. And it's going to be a happy music. If you need a little happy music, this is for you. And it's from 5:30 to 7. The food trucks will be
open. I don't want happy music. I'm
okay.
Sorry.
Well, some people do like, you know, Gregorian chants or something. I just really don't know. I'm sure they're fine. But anyway, that's happening. And then there is a Shakespeare celebration from 6 to 8 at the 360 North.
Right, that is the Juno Douglas Little Theater
doing a thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then, all those proceeds go to the families of the people who were killed in the Orlando massacre.
Okay. Back to the happy music.
Okay.
Yeah. 7 to 9 at the Rockwell Ballroom is Maude Carousel Mania. He comes up in the summertime and does all sorts of crazy things. So go do that. Perseverance Theater presents Stars Singing in the Rain. And that is at Perseverance Theater. And you can get tickets over there, I think, and that's at 7:30. Gordy Ten Trees is at the Alaskan Hotel on Friday night at 9 p.m. On Saturday, as you mentioned, we're just going to eat. It's just a thing, just a lot of fish in the afternoon. And you could also go on a walking tour if you felt like you had eaten too much. You could go on either the history walking tour or the art walking tour. No, you can't go on the art walk, and that's on Sunday. Anyway, let's see. There's Stars Antigone is at 2 o'clock. These are the young people that Perseverance has doing things in the summertime. Glimpses of Power, 7 to 8:30 p.m. It's a community gospel choir and worship concert out at Chapel by the Lake. Maude Carousel at 7 and at 10. They're doing their mania thing at the Rockwell on Saturday. Perseverance Theater has Extreme Theater at 7:30. And Christmas in July, as you mentioned, and then Gordy Ten Trees is at the Alaskan Hotel. On Sunday, it is we have Stars Singing in the Rain again. There is out on campus the Racial Justice and Anti-Violence, a creative conversation happening out there. Let's hope for a good sunny day for that one. It's going to be a really nice community gathering, so come out and join the artists and join the community on that one. There is our art walk tour is at 1, and you meet down at the Marine Park. Christy Lenny is at Rockwell Ballroom at 6:30, and that is you can buy tickets online at Suite 907, I believe. On Monday, there's a Cowabunga Farm Vacation Bible School. Cowabunga, who knew? So you can find out more information about that on our calendar. There is a House of Wickersham Tours, and you should try those out some of these days. It's a very interesting building. Makerspace, we mention this every Monday. It's your opportunity to go use power tools and build things. There's a free course for prospective home buyers at the Riverbend Apartments. It's from 6 to 10 p.m. Douglas 4th of July committee meeting. Really? They must be just going over what happened. And we get to start the folio stuff. Juno is hosting the first folio. The museum was selected for this. We get to read all of the plays. Shakespeare plays.
Not
yes.
All the plays, just Shakespeare plays.
There's plenty of them. Yes, and so the whole calendar is in the Capital City Weekly, and it's on our calendar on the web. But on Monday night at 7 o'clock at the Jack, we're going to have Much Ado About Nothing. And they're going to be all over town in various locations and various times and places.
Let's reel this back. So who's going to be? I'm not really seeing
okay.
it. So the museum
okay.
was awarded.
The first folio, it's the anniversary, the 400th anniversary of this publication that has all, and it's going to be over there, and it's opened up to the
at the new library,
play. Yeah.
At the new museum.
So you can see the actual
okay,
thing.
The APK
but,
building.
Yeah, look at this. There's like pages and pages of readings that are going to happen. Much Ado About Nothing. Every Monday is at the Jack. So you can come
and who's reading?
Oh, Aaron Elmore. Let me get the list out. I brought the list
Aaron
of readers.
Aaron is with Theater in the Rockies.
Yes,
King,
and he's
Arthur.
Also at the museum. And they are, sort of our residential Shakespeare people, I guess. So we have Aaron and Katie and Catherine Melville and Denise Scott and Becky Orford and Dan Wayne and Peter Freer and Terry Kramer, Diane Martin, Sharon Gateman, Gino Spartz, Mike Fleischhauer, Travis Smith, Margo Waring, Deb Smith, Phil Smith, Eric Kiefner, Maria Gladyszewski, Mary Lou Spartz, Erica Bergen, Jenny Hayes, Kate Ross,
So this is a company.
And there's
people,
a whole other page. Yeah.
But they're not all reading at one time. They're just.
I think they're just showing the plays. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should always see the plays. As Aaron points out, the plays were meant to be heard out loud. So let's do it.
So every Monday at the Jack.
Okay, so here's the
Every Monday at the Jack calendar.
Yes, and at the Egan Library is on Tuesday, Rockwell's on Wednesday, Valley Library on Thursday, the Slam on Friday, McFeeters Hall on Saturday.
And how long is this Shakespeare mean you're going for a month?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can really get your Shakespeare dose.
And the full schedule is in the Capital City Weekly that came out today.
Mm-hmm. And it's also on our website on the calendar. But, if you have always wanted to hear any one of these or not, just go do
and
it.
And are they the whole place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, and there'll be popcorn and there'll be food and bring your, you know, whatever, your jammies, whatever. Midsummer's Eve, I don't know. Anyway, it's very exciting.
When you're at Perry, you know, or something, I don't know.
It's exciting that Juno was picked for this. It's exciting that it's at our new museum. But there's also a whole series of activities listed, like there's game day. The Platypus people are going to do a game day out at the library. So you can make your own costumes, your Shakespearean costumes. Brown Boots is going to put together things like that.
And they put a lot of puppy sleeves.
Yes, and little funny hats. Feathers and such, you have high boots, I don't know, whatever. So they've just planned a whole bunch of really fun activities for the whole community to do all kinds of things related to Shakespeare.
Okay, and who put together this whole month?
Well, I suspect that it was our friends at Theater in the Rough, along with the people over at the museum.
Sneaky people.
Yes, yes, yes. I think they've been waiting for this for years. It was very exciting that our library would have been selected for this because the library wasn't finished at the time. So they had great faith in us, and it's very exciting. So.
Excellent, very exciting.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Check it all out at Capital City
Weekly
we'll be or
reminding
at the Jack
you
calendar.
Of, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. We want to see you at every single one of them, of course. So there's an opening reception on Tuesday the 26th at the Slam. So you can kick it off there, but you'll hear the first play on Monday night.
What time is that opening reception?
Well, the opening reception is at 1 to 5 in the Slam. And then we are, getting ready to try to build an arts complex. We have the architects back in town, and they're going to be presenting some more finite types of designs or thoughts that they've had, and they're looking for the community to say, go that path, or maybe we should look more down this path, or I really like this or that. So that will be from 5 to 7 out at the Valley Library. So come on out to
what
see
day
that.
Is that?
That is on Tuesday, and at 7 p.m. That goes from 5 to 7, and then at 7 you can rush out to the Egan Library and hear Love's Labor Lost. So
let's go back to the arts complex for a moment.
Okay.
So let's say somebody's been not keeping up on the arts complex.
It's pretty easy to do.
Where is this proposed complex going to be?
We would like to attach it to the existing building.
And the Jack.
The Jack. It will go sort of into the parking lot between us and Centennial Hall. And then there's a big, people are concerned about the parking, which we are all concerned about the parking, even now. We're concerned about the parking. So we'll be working on solutions for that, for the whole Willoughby area. I think I think the parking is a problem at this point, even now, before we built the building. So I think the community is working on coming up with some solutions for that. But that's the idea, is that it's going to build into the parking lot. The goal is another theater space with raked seating. That was probably going to be in the 300-seat level. Another performance space that will be a little bit more flexible. It could be used for parties or it could be used for theater in the round type
similar
things.
Similar to the current Jack.
Yeah, although the current Jack will remain also so that you can still have your dances and your car shows and all those sorts of things and trade shows and all that sort of stuff. The original feasibility study that McDowell Group did with us included all of those spaces, hoping to have a cafe, expand our gallery a little bit, put in more office spaces so that we have more of the arts groups all in one spot. And I think it's going to be, I'm really optimistic about it. It's very exciting, and there's a lot of really good energy about it. A lot of people are very, we've been waiting a long time. There's a pent-up desire for this building, so I think we're at the right spot for it. People say, well, you know, oil prices and the things are doom and gloom, and that is true. But at the same time, I feel as though the community is energized. We just, the Sobolov Center, the SLAM building, this building, it's the way of the future, and I think we can really do things for our community with this kind of investment. So,
yeah, this kind of proactive.
Yeah.
So in the wide spectrum of possibilities, when would this building start?
Very soon. We're hoping that, like, getting the design stuff probably finished next June, maybe, and get, you know, we're hopeful. Funding is, of course, the thing. So we will be working on a schedule to work that. I've been putting that schedule together, and assuming we can find the funding as we need it, it should be in another couple of years.
Okay. And if you would like to be part of the process,
we want you in
our new community performing arts center. You should go to the meeting on Tuesday night from 5 to 7
at the Valley Library.
Another beautiful new building.
Yes, and it's you know, it's just really important that we have all the community thoughts and people involved that want to be involved. So we hope to see you. Thank
That'd
you.
Be great.
All right.
Okay. So there you have it. Shakespeare.
Forsooth.
Yeah. Shakespeare, buildings, so on and so forth. So
yes.
Thank you, Nancy, for
we'll
all that
you
do.
All right.
All right. So you've been listening to Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown's been at the board. He's the producer and engineer of this show. I'm Joan Partis. I join you on Thursdays. Tomorrow, Andy Klein will be here, and he'll be talking to a host of people. Hear about the draft community energy plan, the Juno Icefield Research Project, and who's playing at the Alaskan. And also, he'll be talking, importantly, with Christine Neme Erickson about the community art and dialogue event to discuss racial justice and anti-violence. So that event is Sunday from 2 to 5 at UIS Rec Center, and it's an event organized as a way to collectively process thoughts and feelings about the ongoing racial violence in our country. Visual works and performances will happen, and they'll be followed by a community dialogue. If you want to hear more about that, you could hear Christy with Andy tomorrow on Juno Afternoon. Okay, so here we are. We've got rain tonight. Tomorrow, rain, highs around 60, highs in the mid-50s downtown and in the valley. Friday night, same. And then Saturday, we're looking at rain and southeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday night, looks like locally heavy rainfall possible. Okay, so we are living in Juno. Our weather's coming back to us, and it is great to spend your afternoon with you. Thanks for listening to Juno Afternoon and KTOO.